Okay, fine. So we're going to move now from Tamei HaMitzvot to trying to understand the nature of the halachot. And as we already noted in the Pesukim, some of the Pesukim focus on describing the rest of the land, Shabbat Haaretz. Whether it's Shabbat Haaretz or Shabbat LaHashem, but still, it seems to focus on the land. And other Pesukim focus on what you have to do. Tishmitena unitashta, right? You shall do whatever. And plus, within the Tamei HaMitzvot, we saw similar divides, where some of them focus on the land, right? Definitely the Rambam's Svara, that the reason for Shemitah is to let the land lie fallow, which clearly focuses on the land. Some of the others maybe, and many of them focus on the person, though, again, that could just be that the person, in order to engender those theological reflections, right, he needs to let the land lie fallow, right? So there can be a divide between the Tamei HaMitzvah and the nature of the mitzvah itself. But that's what I want to analyze, okay? For those of you who like Lamdish jargon, right, the way all the Acharonim present it, like steal myself before I use them, right? That's exactly what they do, right? Right? Is it, right, is a Chovat Gavra, right, an obligation on the person, or, right, Chovat Chevta or Chovat Aret, meaning it's an obligation on the land, but meaning it's an obligation to bring about in a certain state on the land object. This is like the classic Brisker thing. Is Chevta Gavra. Is it on the person? Is it on the object? Sometimes it works. In this particular case, it works. But it doesn't make me like it anymore. So besides the Pesukim that we already noted, and the Tamei HaMitzvot, as we said, can point in it, the main Gemara that people point to is this not-so-easy-to-understand passage in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. And the question, the halakhic question that they're basing themselves on as the test case is the question of whether having someone who is not himself obligated in the midst of Shemitah, in this case a non-Jew, if you have him work your land, is that a violation of Shemitah, right? That's right. That's their test case. But again, the conceptual question at play. Exactly. Okay, so let's try to get through this Gemara. Now, of course, right. This is sort of like the oversimplification of the question. As we'll see, it's more complicated, and there might be other nafgemina or nafgeminas if you hate grammar. Right, not right. Nafgamina means that which comes out from it. So the plural is nafgamina, the things that come out from it, rather than nafgaminas. Right. Yes, and as you have noticed, I don't like jargon. Jargon annoys me. Fine.
What's the worst phrase you said?
What? Phrase I hate the most.
I like jargon.
I don't know. There's a lot of jargon I don't like.
What's the most hated philosophy job?
What?
I don't know. Philosophy, especially analytic philosophy, is full of a lot of jargon. I don't like people who only write in jargon. I like people who write clearly. If they only write in jargon, it drives me crazy. Like people who talk about the induction problem by talking about GRU. I can't deal with GRU. It drives me crazy.
Like
what?
GRU.
What?
Nothing.
Analytic philosophers have this, modern analytic philosophers have this obsession with the problem of induction. And specifically, the problem of GRU.
What's GRU?
GRU is a made-up color that will be green until the year 2050, and then will turn blue in the year 2050, because that is supposed to be Akasha on the problem of induction. If induction is that I extrapolate based on what something has been until a certain point and assume that it'll be like that in the future, the existence of the theoretical color grew would undermine the plausibility of induction. There have literally been many books written about the problem of grew.
What? That's
what I think too. And that's being trained in analytic philosophy still. I'm like, I mean, I get the problem. I like the problem of induction. It's a very important problem.
But
to spend the entire time arguing about GRU, and then if GRU wasn't enough for you, at the end, they're like, oh, but what about Gleam? I'm like, oh, God. I kid you not. This is actually like their entire
once you figure out color, they bring in another?
What?
They bring in another hypothetical color?
Yes, Gleam. Yeah, it's a book by Len Goodman. Was like really kicked it off.
Blue and GRU and Gleam.
Ugh, that was not my favorite.
No, but what is it? Who can manage to like write a whole book about blue?
Len Goodman. I don't know what he wants from me. He wrote a book on it. You'd be surprised how often.
What has to be the thought process? Like, yes. So this is what people want to read.
Again, I like the problem of induction. I took a advanced seminar on induction. There's only two people in the class. I really do like the problem of induction, but this drives me nuts. Yeah, it was fun. It was just me and each of my Rosenzweig, which is admittedly a very intense class. Itamar was my year in yeshiva, but now he's like a Magid Shir in YU and a Dayan on the Besdin of America. So
yeah,
like,
is
this that? No, he's my age.
Uh-huh.
Not Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig, his son, my age.
Is he as old as you are?
Can we stop?
Stop.
No. God, that is a very odd question to ask. Okay, let's look at the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says, Tanan, just for that, Chaim has to read the Gemara. Go ahead, Chaim. Okay, so what does that mean?
That Shammai forbids selling a plowing cow, not a plowing ox, a plowing cow.
Yes.
And they don't allow this to contract.
Yeah, what does that mean? So what if you contract it?
Meaning that you can sell it because people might use...
Correct, right? You can sell it because you can assume, right? You're allowed to assume you're allowed to assume that the person you're selling to is not necessarily using it for a prohibited purpose because he might eat the animal rather than use it to plow during Shemitah, okay? Fine. So then Amar Rabbah, then there's a whole discussion in the middle of exact problems of it, and at some point Rabbah says, Hatam ein adam mitzuve al shvitat behemto bishvi'it. What does that mean?
It's either here or there that person is going to mandate about allowing the animal to rest during Shvitah.
Why did I cut off just two words? Me dummy. I don't know why I cut out just two words. Honestly, probably cut out those.
Yeah,
right, the word says, me dummy. Hatam ein adam mitzuve al shvitat behemto bishvi'it. So what does he say? Right, he says, right, the Gemara here is trying to figure out Shabbat. Right, and the Gemara is comparing Shabbat to Shemitah. And Rabbah says, how can you compare Shabbat to Shemitah? In the case of Shemitah, the reason that you can be more lenient in terms of allowing someone to rent out his property or lend out his property is because a person is not obligated to have his animal rest during Shemitah, but on Shabbat he is. And therefore on Shabbat it's more problematic to rent out an animal that will end up working on Shabbat than it is to rent out an animal that might end up working during Shemitah. Okay? Right? Because on Shabbat there's a problem to have your animal work. Okay? Fine. So then what does the Gemara say? Right. Ha'chad Adam Mutzur Shuvim Tov B'Shabbat. Amar Le Abaye. Abaye said to him, "V'kol Heichad Adam Mitzuveh Asur." Right, what does he say? Is it true that any time you are... Right. Is it true that every time, right, you are prohibited to have your animal work, so then you can't even sell it or, sorry, rent it out for someone else to potential work with it? Vehare, what's his counterproof? Hare, sadeh.
You commented, about letting your field lie fallow.
Yes, exactly. Right, during Shemitah, you're obligated to let your land lie fallow. Utnan.
You're not supposed to sell your field during the
Shemitah. It's a ding year, right? That's a particular type of a field, right? Which is a plowed field, because plowed fields are normally used for planting. Right?
Right,
but, correct, but that's not usually what it's used for. Uvei Hill, Matir Uvei Hill says you can.
Because it's possible that you're just going to let it leave it alone.
Exactly. So Matir LaRavashi. Very good. So then Matir LaRavashi, we call Echadeinan Mutuvesh Shari. Is it true that when you're not commanded, it's Mutar?
Yeah.
Vare Kelim, what about vessels? De'ena Damutuvesh Vita Kelim Bishvid. You're not prohibited. You don't have to make sure that your plow rests during Shemitah. Utnan, Elu in Kelim, Shenadam Rashal Mokram B'Shvid, Amacharesha, V'kol Kela, Ha'olva, Mizareh, V'adekir, and all these different things that you use for plowing, and
right,
shovels and the like, it's prohibited, right? So Elam Ravashi, Kolei Chadika L'mitle Talinan, right? The rule is
anything
that you can plausibly...
Anything that can be plausibly used for innocent purposes,
yeah, exactly,
can sell, and anything that can be plausibly used for guilty purposes.
Exactly. Okay. So in this context, right, the Gemara has this very suggestive phrase, right? It's trying to figure out, in cases where it's not only prohibited necessarily for me to do something, but it's prohibited to bring about a certain result, have my animal not rest, have the land not, whatever it is, right, then it's more problematic to rent out my whatever, right, because of what it will facilitate. And in that context, the Gemara has this suggestive line, which is, Sadeh Adam Mitzuveh Ashvutzat Sadehu Bishvi'it. A field, you shouldn't be allowed to rent out animals and the like. Why? Because you are obligated to make sure that the field rests. Right, and therefore it seems to be a problem not just for you to work the field, but for you to have your animals working the fields or your kelim working the fields. Not because there's a problem with your animal working, but because there's a problem with having the field work. Right, that somehow the focus of the prohibition is not just on the person, but is on the field. Right, you're not just, or to put it differently, right, if you want, I guess, English jargon here, right, not chefta gavra, not person, not, you know, gavra versus sadeh, right? But a maybe helpful way of doing English is process versus result, right? Is it simply the process of working the field which is prohibited, or is it the result of the field being worked that you are obligated to prevent, right? If it's just about the process, so as long as you don't do it, right, it's not a problem. But if if your responsibility is to ensure a certain result, that the land rests, right, that there's a result of a rested land, so then anything that you do that facilitates not resting might be problematic, right? And that suggestive line, that Adam Mitzuvah Shvitzat Sadehu, seems to bias it in the direction that, in Shemitah, there's more than just a personal obligation, but there's an obligation to assure a certain result. Okay? At first glance, Rashi seems to take this position. Why? Because what does he say? Adam mitzuvah shvitat sadeh. How does he prove it? Yeah. Right. He says, listen, how do I know that the land has to rest? Because what does the pasuk say?
That it's the year of Hashem Atah.
For?
The land.
Laris. Right? He picks up on those diukim we saw in the pasukim, that sometimes the Torah describes it not in terms of, right, you shouldn't plow, but shnat shabbatam yelaris. The land shall have a year of rest, which seems to put the focus on the, right, on the land. But this is not so simple, right? Because not all the Rishonim read it this way. Okay, so this is a little bit of a harder reading, so let's try to work through it. Okay, let's go to Tosfot. Tosfot says, Nir Elif Arei.
Hold on, I have a question.
Yes.
So then you just say, like, oh, you know, you shouldn't be selling it, right? Like, say, oh, selling, you sell his, like, the equipment. So that seems to imply, like, you don't want the result of but renting it out to be.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that kind of like, I mean, yeah, obviously it makes sense that it appeals to, but like, can you say it also makes sense, like, with a person? Like, you don't want to, like, get into, like, the habit of, like, dealing with, you know, appeals?
No. So, okay. Meaning, the way to do it in a person would be to focus not on you, but focus on your responsibility that other people shouldn't work the field because of listening to Iver, which is the primary sugya in Avodah Zarah, right? But the language of the Gemara, right? Adam mitzuveh al, right? Adam mitzuveh al shvidat sadehu seems to put the field at the center. Now, again, we'll see that not everyone's going to agree with this. Some of the Rishonim are going to indeed go to the direction that you go, which is don't take the word so seriously. That's not what it really means. It doesn't really mean that the land has to rest, right? It means something else, right? It means something like what Moshe's getting at. Right, for that, let's see. Okay, so if you look at Tosfot, what does Tosfot say? This is the middle of Tosfot Midami. I only gave you the last few lines. So what does he say? Nir Elif Arish. Hatam ein adem mutzuveh al shvitat behemto b'shviz. You're not warned against your animal working on shvita perush. What does that mean? Lefi she'ein ha'isur talui b'gufa b'ema el b'gufa karka. Because the prohibition isn't in the animal to work. The prohibition is the land. And even if I would lend my animal to a non-Jew during Shemitah, the problem would not inhere in the animal. Okay, so far what it doesn't sound like is the prohibition in the land or in the person? In the land, right? Not in the animal, or the person even, but in the land. Right? At least his language. But then as you continue, he says, Aval gabe Shabbat, Sha'isur talui begufa ve'ema, right? On Shabbat, the prohibition here is in the animal. Ve'ika isur lebalim im yarchosh bo ve'kochavim, and it is prohibited for if a non-Jew were to use the animal to plow, the owner would violate. Lefichach ein lehatir lemochra mitam tliyad deshkita. So it's not enough to just say, well, he might shecht it, because if he doesn't shecht it, whose problem is it? It's mine, right? Uparech, and then the Gemara says, v'harei sadeh, but what about a field? Da'adam mitzuveh shvitat sadeh. That you are commanded on your field resting. U'kishihu biyad Yisrael acher. Yesh bo isur d'oraita. Im zara bo ha'Yisrael v'talinan le'atera. And if it is in the hands of another Jew, then it would be prohibited, and nevertheless, we are tola leheter, meaning we allow you to assume that it might be mutar. Now, what do you think? What does Tosfot believe? What is the nature of the Isser according to Tosfot? Why do you say on the person? Right, so on the one hand, he starts off with the language of the field. But in the end of the day, right, what does he say? Right, what might lead you to believe that it's on the person? Because he says, when is there a problem if you give the field to who?
Someone you know that.
To another Jew. Why?
Because if you know that he's going to do it.
Right.
Then
is that a problem?
So
it's not clear in Tosfot, right? It sounds like it might be more listening either. The problem is less that he's going to work the field qua the field. It's that the Jew can't work the field. And if I give him the field, I'm facilitating his working the field.
Yeah.
Right? But that's not, right? But the question is, where is the problem, right, focused? On the person who will be working the field or on the field which will be worked?
I mean, it's kind of fine in both. It's not mutually exclusive.
It might not be mutually exclusive.
I don't really like that. If he's not going to get a field from you, he's going to get a field from someone else. And that, I mean, he could buy it from none too, but
yeah. So that's one of the complicated.
It's not that he doesn't know better. It's that he's buying your land and he's or renting whatever, and then with that he's doing whatever. I don't know.
Right. So I think honestly in Tosvot. In Tosvot, it's hard to, right? Some of his language implies that it's about the land, but in the end of the day, right?
Yeah. It's still a favor.
You know, there are indications that it might be more the problem that it's because you're giving it to a Jew, and the Jew can't work the land, right? And the prohibition really inheres in that, right? So again, right, and this is what some of the Achronim point out, right? It might be. It's not totally clear in Tosfos. The main proof, right, that Tosfos seems to think it's on the person is Yesh bo isur d'oraita. Is when you give it over to another Jew, who does Tosfos seem to think will be the person who violates the prohibition? No. Doesn't sound like that. Right? What is that?
Yeah, it's a weird looking plane.
Oh, no, that's a military plane. That's
a military plane.
Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
Oh, that happens all the time. Very small countries, so things are flying over. You know.
For me.
Many of the Achronim point out, I didn't give this to you, but in Tosfos Rabbeinu Elchanan, he changes just one word, right? He has the same, basically, as Tosfos, but in the end he says, Kishachar choresh bo b'shviyat heve alei isur d'oraita. Not bo isur d'oraita, but alei isur d'oraita. Now, what's the difference?
So is on him.
So who's him?
He's talking about the person.
What?
He's talking about the person.
Which person?
The
right, so this is the million-dollar question, right? Is who is the him, right? Because, again, if you think that the problem is on the person, then who should be violating? I mean, if the person
sold it.
If fundamentally Shemitah is a violation that you shouldn't work the field, then when you give it over to another Jew and the other Jew works it, who is the primary violator?
The other Jew.
The other Jew. But if I have to make sure that my field doesn't get worked and I give it over and another Jew ends up working it, then who's the... at least, right? So who might also be the primary... whatever? Right, me. Right? So many of the Harnum point out that this, right, this little girsa change between Tosfos and Tosfos Rabbeinu Elchanan may be the difference. Why? Because right, again, what's the difference between bo, heavy bo isur, and heavy ale isur? Right. So this is what the Chazon Ish and Shlomo Zalman both argue, is that Tosfos, who says heavy bo, seems to be saying that who violates? The person who works it. Right? And what's the problem? Why am I not allowed to give it over to that person? Because it was an Ifir. Tosfos Rabbeinu Elchanan, when he says heavy alei isur d'oraita, sounds like the prohibition, not listen to Ifir, but the prohibition of working the land in Shemitah is the fault of the owner of the land. Right, so the Chazon Ish and Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach both argue that this is a machloket Tosfos and Tosfos Rabbeinu Elchanan. That Tosfos thinks, in the end of the day, fundamentally Shemitah is an iser to work the land, and that's why when you give over the land to somebody else, they violate. You violate the neighbor, but they violate Shemitah. And Tosfos Rabbeinu Elchanan says no. when you give over your land to be worked, you violate not the Isser of listening here, but the Isser of allowing your land to be worked during Shemitah. Now, it's a little bit clearer in the Ritva and Tosot, in the Tosot Rid, but let's try to get through it. So Tosot, the Ritva says, Amar le Abaye, v'kol heichad adem mitzuvah miyasur, v'harei sadat adem mitzuvah shvita tzadeh b'shvit. Okay, so now how does he understand that line? Perish. V'ahacha di'ita tarte, isura d'lifne iver, v'isura d'sadehu mishuhu mitzuvah shvitata, afilu achi talu beit hillel l'kula. What does the Ritva very clearly say? How do you read the Gemara? That when Mordechai gives over his land to none of you ever shine. So Mordechai gives over his land to big time name. No, I don't want him violating Shemitah.
Haman.
Haman, good. Yeah, Haman the Jew. Haman the Jew.
Unfortunately,
right?
That evil, evil.
Very unfortunate name. Yes, Korach the Jew gives over to Haman the Jew. Right? There's this story. When I was growing up, I heard this story, which I don't know if it's true, but it was one of those like apocryphal stories that I heard in like camp. Right? That I heard it, I think, once in the name of Rav Kook, but I probably heard it in the name of someone else, and who knows if any of these stories are true, right? But that one of these like early Zionist anti, like people who left religion with, you know, yes, exactly, decided to, right, really sort of stick it to everybody. Again, I don't know if the story is true, but I remember hearing it again, right? So when he had a son, he decided to name his son the most rebellious name he could come up with. So he named his son Nimrod Korach, okay?
Oh, God.
And
that's just a little, like, that sets his son up to get bullied.
Oh, yeah, but whatever. So, again, I don't know if this story is true, but as I heard it when I was growing up, this person wanted to, like, I think I heard it from in the name of Rav Kook, right? Get, like, Rav Kook angry. So he, like, went over to him and said, you know, Harav, I had a kid. You know, I want to know what I named him? I named him Nimrod Korach. How does that make you feel? And her cook said, what do you mean? Makes me feel great. Your father was from. So if he had named his son Nimrod Korach, which would have meant that his son would rebel against him and become not from, so then I would have been upset. But you, I hope your son rebels against you. Which, true or not, it's a very sharp story. Yes. What? It is a good story.
He thought he was going to be like, Korach, such a great name. Korach was a good son.
So not Mordechai. Nimrod the Jew lends out his field to Korach the Jew. Fine, yalla.
Yeah.
So the Ritva is very clear. The Ritva says, Nimrod, who lent out the field to Korach, what Isurim does he violate? What does he say? He violates twice. What does he violate?
Lifnei
Iver. Lifnei Iver and?
Not letting him land.
And Shemitah the Karka. So according to Ritva, is the Isser on the land or on the person?
On the person.
On the land.
Okay,
he didn't protect his land by selling it out.
Both! Ika Tarte! There are two prohibitions. Lifnei Iver, for having had Korach work the land, and in Isser, because the land is supposed to be, right? I mean, the Ritva is very clear. The Ritva says, listen, I violate two things when I have someone else work my land. One, Lifnei Iver, because
I can still an Aver for him to work it.
Because it's an Aver to work the land, and I have facilitated that. That's called Lifnei Iver, right? And I also violate directly for having my field work, because both the process and the result, both the person and the land, must rest. Right? So the Ritva very clearly says, both! Right? That the land of... there is two elements to this prohibition. So what we have so far is a diuk in Tosfot that the nature of the Isser is only on the person. A diuk in Tosfot Rabbeinu Chanan that the Isser is only on the land. And an explicit statement by the Ritva that the Isser is on the person and the land. Right? Which, of course, the Ritva is easy because, you know, you look at the Sukkim, some of them sound like the person shouldn't work and some of it sounds like the land has to rest. The Ritva just says...
Yeah, sure.
Yes, and if you want the jargon, right, what's the jargon? The jargon here that the Briscoes would invoke is what's called Tzvei Dinim, which literally just means
two laws,
Yiddish for two laws, right? Very creative. That there are two, both aspects are true. It's a dual natured prohibition. Right? There are two prohibitions. Right? Tzvei Dinim is God, it's also the Chepta and also the Gavra. Tzvei Dinim! Yay! Woohoo! I'm trying to think. Like when I was in Rambam, people didn't use Ray Friedman and Ray Har. They had their own like.
They're pretty good about like.
They're pretty good. They had their own like go-to words, but they didn't use so much of that jargon, right? They had certain things that they loved, which even though they're like go-to phrases, I think they're actually pretty clear, like quality versus quantity and things like that. Those are actually pretty descriptive words that things go. Though I do know they like those.
I don't think they. Well, that's from a
Har.
No, that's not true. There are certain Acharonim who are very into three. There are certain Acharonim who are obsessed with this. Rav Gusman, Briskers are very into two dinim. Rav Gusman, everything is three. Everything. There's three dinim. Everything. It's unbelievable. Somehow, where everyone else finds two, he finds three. Rav Lichtenstein never had three. If there was two, and there was three, it was really two, which subdivided. Right? There was two, and one of them, he would find a way that it was two, and then one of them would subdivide. Right?
What's the joke about the Jews? Like,
two Jews, three opinions.
Yeah, two Jews, three
opinions. Halavai, it was only three opinions.
Usually,
my bigger problem is when I'm talking to one Jew who has three opinions. It's like, didn't you just say the opposite a minute ago? Don't ask me based on what I said a minute ago! It's like, yeah.
A minute ago is a minute ago. Now is now.
Exactly. Okay. So let's look at the Ritva. The Ritva, sorry, the Rit. Let's do a minute on biographies here. Okay, so Tosfot in general, right? Let's do all these obvious. Tosfot, who is Tosfot?
Many
people who live over the course of
a lot of years,
hundreds of years, mostly in
France
and
Spain
and Germany, right?
Who recorded all of
this? Here's the problem. The Balei HaTosfot period goes over the course of like 200 years in France and Germany, right? The Tosfot on our daf, it depends. In different Masechtot, it's different primary compilers. Most Masechtot were compiled by who?
Rabbeinu Tam.
No, Rabbeinu Tam is one of the main Balei HaTosfot, but he's not the compiler.
Okay.
Right? Right, obviously, he's an early Balei HaTosfot, and Tosfot quotes many other physicians who lived much later than him. He is the primary. What?
I know it's not the way
he's not. No, it's much later. It's most are Rabbi Eliezer of Tuch, or Rabbi Eliezer of Tuch, right? T-O-U-Q-U-E, I think. Tuch.
That was a very roundabout way of spelling Tuch.
It's like
right.
French or something.
Of course it is.
I don't actually think, if I remember correctly, Tosfot and Avodah Zarah is not. I think Tosfot and Avodah Zarah is actually German rather than French. And the German Balei HaTosfot are even later and more obsessed with compiling. If I remember correctly, the Tosfot of the Zohar is German. Right, and obviously the Balei HaTosfot are, right, they start with the Mishpacha of Rashi, right, his sons-in-law and his grandsons and his great-grandsons. Right? His grandsons like Rabbeinu Tam, his great-grandsons like the Ri.
Says here, the Tosfot can be understood only by those who are well advanced in the study of Talmud.
That's true, too.
Entangled discussions are treated as though they were simple.
Sure. Okay, what about the Ritva? What's the Ritva's name? Where does he live? What is his name? His name is Rabbi Yom Tov. Rabbi Yom Tov Asvili. Yom Tov of Seville. Right? He's from Seville. Yom Tov Asvili. He's from Spain.
There are plenty of people named.
He's from Spain. The advice is Spain. He's relatively late, actually. He is two generations after the Rambam.
Years
yes, okay, well, let's do this. When's the Ramban? Who is Ramban?
He's a Rishon.
Who is a Rishon? You know, 9th century, 15th century, whatever.
Moshe ben Nachman,
yeah. He's in the 1200s, correct.
No.
So then he has, so the Ritva is a student, sometimes people say the Raj, but it's more really the student of the Ra'a, or of Aaron Alevi, whatever it is. Okay, fine.
I know my mom.
And what about the Rid? Who is the Joseph Rid?
Does it mean like
Donna? See, he's actually, thank you. Rabbi Isaiah Zitrani, Rabbi Yeshaya Zitrani. Where is he from, Kobe? Did you have it pulled up? I told you, you can Google it, I don't care.
Italy.
Very good. So Joseph Rid is not really, well, it's, you know, he's not classic Balei Tosfot period. He's one of the interesting, the Italians are very interesting. Joseph Rid, Shibboleth Halakhet.
They lived in Venice.
Venice.
Very healthy.
What? Those are not the original. Those are, you're talking over the course of hundreds of years in different countries. Those aren't the original.
Wait, you weren't referencing.
Why did the original? Who's the original? That's not the original. What are you talking about? Why did the original, Tosfot Chacham Anglia, that is not the original. What does it say in the Tosfot Chacham Australia? It's like, I don't know.
That isn't really a thing.
No, it's not. That was a Purim spiel when I was in YU. What? Okay. Okay. Fine. So what does the Tosfot Rid say? The Tosfot Rid says, Kasha Lituva. I have a lot of problems on this Gemara. He says, Umi dami tzivui deshvitat sadehu b'shvit, vish tzivui deshvitat behemto b'shabbat. He said, how can you compare the resting of the land in Shemitah and the resting of your animal on Shabbat? Tzivui deshvitat sadehu b'shvit, eino ela shelo ya'asehu melacha b'sadehu. In Shemitah, the command is that you should not work your field. Avalim hiskir sadeu lachashura lashviit eino over hamaskir. But if you rent out your land to someone else who's going to work it, you do not violate. So this stage of the Rid, he's very clear. What does he think? Is the prohibition on the land or the person?
Person.
The person, 100%. Right, to the exclusion of the land. And therefore, he says, I rent it out to somebody else. I don't violate. The ein bo ela mishum lifnei iver lo titen mechol. The only potential problem is facilitating sin, what we call lifnei iver. Right? That's the only problem. Ulaskir sadeo ligoy bishvid ein bo yisur tarakal. And therefore, if I rent it out to a non-Jew, then what? What is ein bo yisur klal? It's not prohibited at all. Why? Right? So until now, we've been dealing... So let's just pause. Until now, we've been dealing with the question of renting it out to a Jew who's going to work it in Shemitah. There, everybody agrees that's problematic. The question is, why is it problematic? Is it problematic directly on you because you can't have your field worked? Or is it indirectly a problem because of lifnei iver? Right? But now, if you isolate it further, the way to isolate it further is to move to the case of non-Jew. Because in a non-Jew, there isn't a lifnei iver problem. Why is there not a lifnei iver problem?
Because you're not causing anybody to sin.
Why are you not causing anyone to sin?
He's not true. He doesn't have the mitzvah of shmita.
Thank you. Right? That was the first answer was wrong. The second answer is right. No. This is important because the classic case of lifnei iver on Daf Vav, right? The Gemara in Avodah Zarah has two classic cases of lifnei iver. One is handing wine to a nazir, and the other is handing aver menachai to a non-Jew. I mean, the Gemara is very clear, even though some Acharon try to get out of it, the Gemara is very clear that fundamentally, lifnei iver is aser for Jews or non-Jews, meaning you can't facilitate sin to Jews or non-Jews. The reason that it would be less problematic here is not because he's not Jewish, but because non-Jews are not obligated in Shemitah. Right? That's different. Right? It's not because I don't have spiritual responsibilities to a non-Jew. Right? It's because this is not his spiritual responsibility. Those are very different, right? Those are very, very different. Say it again?
A non-Jew is
Avram and Achai. That's the Gemara's case. You gave him Avram and Achai. That's the Gemara's case. You gave him Avram and Achai.
Yeah, I'm worrying about that.
You took an animal, you ripped off its leg, and you handed it to him and said, here. And he said, raw shawarma. I don't know.
I mean, technically, you can rip it off and then cook it.
That's true. You're right. There are less prohibitions, but there are some. Right? It's like, don't say, here, take a gun and shoot him. Don't do that. Right? Bad idea. Right? Or take this idol and worship it. Don't do that. What? Yes, I know. It's one of those things you're going to have to sell hate for on Yom Kippur. Right?
If you haven't cut the umbilical cord, is it still considered a Menachai?
It's a good question. It is a very complicated. So again, it was apparently Reb Chaim's Bar Mitzvah Drasha was the exact difference of of the status of Shita for Jews and non-Jews. And okay, specifically Ben Pakua, but we won't get into that now. So he says, fine. So therefore, to give it to a non-Jew, you don't violate it at all. Because Jews are not obligated to have the land rest, they're prohibited to work the field. But on Shabbat, you can't have your animal work. Whether you're doing it or non-Jews are doing it, the hachi kamazir krah, because that's what the Torah warns you about. Lemanya nuach shor chavakamarecha kamocha, that your animal must rest like you. Chayav litein lo nayich shul yazamim lachapilo yidei goyim. The animal has to rest, even if that meant non-Jews working it. The kevan shenit barer shesvitat zadev shvit ena ela laatzmo. And once we've clarified that resting, the land resting, is only for you. Aval al yedei goyim sharei, val yedei Yisrael eina, elo mishum lefnei iver, and for Jews is only lefnei iver. Heichi mati rabuna lemelev shir yuta di Shabbat mishar yut di Shvi'it. So how can you compare Shabbat and Shvi'it? Right now, by the way, if we just pause for a second, right, again, this, like I said, in this particular case, it really does tie into Tam HaMitzvah, right? Because if you, in the level of Tam HaMitzvah, understood like the Rambam, the point of Shemitah was that the land should rest, right? It would make very little sense for the rationale for the mitzvah to be the land should rest, and the surah of the mitzvah, the actual right form of the law to be, you don't work it, but let non-Jews work it freely. Right? That'd be a very weird, right? It doesn't work that way. It's not like, aha, if I don't work, I have a brilliant idea according to this. I will leave, instead of leaving my field fallow, every few years I will have someone else work my field, and that won't count. Right, the land will feel rested, right? It will, but that is obviously nonsense, right? That's not how things work.
Maybe.
No. No, you're trying to defend it. Don't defend it. Don't defend it.
You walk
yes, exactly. Your land is just sick of you, right? That's what it is. Yes. The land is sick of you.
I'm fine with somebody else. Just give me.
Just go away! Like, you read those stupid studies that talking to plants make things grow faster. I can't listen to you anymore.
You
just get
that.
Someone who will be quiet and listen to their music while they're planting. I can't do
it.
Yeah, right, exactly. So that makes no sense.
Because the land is
right?
Sick of you, therefore while you're away.
Fine. So he says, and what's his answer? But what's his answer? Yesh lomar to b'shvit, tat karka is not a b'shvit. What is his answer? Oh, I'm wrong.
What?
On Shemitah, you really have to have the land rest. Meaning, his whole kasha was, oh, it's obvious that only the person violates. He says the only way to defend it is, aha, how can you compare the resting of an animal to the resting of the land? It must be that in both cases, it's result-oriented. Aha. The nafkel and the shabbaton, the elarit, pasur, laskesadeh, lebay b'shvit, alo b'shabbat, lo izhar, no shvitat karka. In fact, he says, I started with the assumption that Shabbat was more demanding than Shemitah, and it turns out that he says, the opposite is true. On Shabbat, I can't work and I can't have my animal work. But what can I have? My land be worked. And on, right, his havamina is that Shabbat is more chamur. Right? Because on Shabbat, you can't work and you can't have your animal work. And on Shemitah, only people can't work. Right? That's the only problem. And giving to a non-Jew is not a problem. And then he does a complete 180 and he says, no, Actually, it's the opposite. Shemitah is worse than Shabbat, because on Shabbat, it might be true that you can't work. And it might be true that you can't have your animals work. But if a non-Jew wants to take your field and work it, that's totally fine in terms of Shemitah Shabbat. Right? But having the field rest during Shemitah, more chamor, right? So he literally goes from one extreme to the other. He starts off by assuming that Shabbat is more chamor, because it includes people and animals, and Shemitah only applies to people, and goes to the opposite extreme and says, no, Shabbat in the end of the day is you and your animals can't work, but the field can be worked as much as it wants. And in Shemitah, the result is problematic, and therefore, even if you let the non-Jew with his own animals work it, you would violate the Isser D'oraita. And exactly, that's exactly what it says, right? So the Rid, right, literally presents this as his question. So what do we have? Seemingly, we have the Rid. His Hava Amina is that it is completely on the person. His Maskana is
completely
on the land, right? Tosfot seems to say that it's on the person, and therefore, when you rent it out to another Jew, the other Jew violates. Tosfot Rabbeinu Hanan seems to say that it's on you to make sure that the result is that your land is not worked, and therefore if you rent it out to another Jew, you violate directly, not just because it was an Eivir, but because it was worked. The Ritva says, Veidinim, right? If you give it to another Jew, you violate twice. Once because you have facilitated his sin on the person, that's called the Fnei Eivir, and the other is that you have now allowed the land to be worked, and it's your land, and that's a problem because Shritat Ha'aret.
Why is everybody but the Ritva so unwilling to say both opinions?
I don't know. So far, what nafkaminas have we seen to this question? We've seen two nafkaminas so far to this question. One is, everybody agrees you can't give over your field to be worked to a Jew, but the question is the reason because of Lifnei Iver, because of facilitating his sin, or the problem is that you're allowing the result to come about, that the land will now not be rested, right? That's nafkamina one. And second nafkamina is to a non-Jew, where here, if you think it's on the person, it would be mutter lechatchila, right? It would be mutter to have the non-Jew work it, right? No problem, right? Except for maybe other, right? Maybe there are abundant problems, which we'll get to, right? But if you think that it's on the land, then even if you give it over to a non-Jew who personally has no prohibition of working the land, it would be usher on you. Because you are now allowing your land to be rested, right? So now we've seen two nafkaminas to this question, okay? Let's not do the Rambam yet. Let's do this. Let's save the Rambam, because the Rambam is very complicated, right? But let's just look at least one achronic articulation of this, right? Because whenever you see any share on this topic, everyone jumps to the Minchat Chinuch, because the Minchat Chinuch is the one who made this famous. Okay, so who's the Minchat Chinuch? Well, first of all, who's the Sefer HaChinuch? The Minchat Chinuch is a parish on the Sefer HaChinuch. Mordechai, who is the Sefer HaChinuch? No. Just what is the answer right now? What is your answer? Who is the Sefer HaChinuch? Don't look it up. I'm looking for the right answer. Just say I don't know.
What?
Just say I don't know.
Oh,
that's the right answer. We have no idea. We have no idea who wrote the Sefer HaChinuch. Thank you. Right? We have. See, you got it right. We don't know who wrote it. Yes, and they all seem to be wrong. Okay, for a long time people thought it was the Ra'ah. It doesn't seem to be the Ra'ah because he constantly contradicts the Ra'ah. He does seem to be someone in the Beit Midrash of the Ramban. The Sefer HaChinuch is fundamentally a book. You can go get it. Is a book what? No, it's a book about the Sefer HaMitzvot. It just goes through all 613 mitzvot, gives a little bit of the basic halacha, the basic like philosophy behind the mitzvah. It seems to be something he wrote for his son, for his bar mitzvah, right? Like basic introduction, right? That's what it is. Yeah. Okay, who is the Minchat Chinuch? Kobe, since you are expert biography looker-upper. No, he's not. The Chinuch, we don't know who he is, but the Minchat Chinuch, we do know who he is. Yes. The Minchat Chinuch, we do know.
Why don't they, like, write their
names? I don't know. So either he wanted to be anonymous, or he wrote his name and got lost in time. Who knows?
How would he want to be anonymous?
Minchat Chinuch was Joseph ben Moses Babad.
Very good. Rabbi Yosef Babad.
From Eternapolis. 1601 in Trez is the worst. Sounds like your
other one. For sure, it's going to be your own.
Thank you. Okay, fine. So Minchas Chinuch, right? Minchas Chinuch is there's like it's one of these early, you know, he's
already named someone.
So he's the Minchas Chinuch is often identified as like a proto Brisker, right? He's like not quite Brisk, but like 100 years before the Briskers were writing like Briskers, he was sort of writing that way already. So he writes as follows. He says this in many, many places. I just gave you one. He says, Da, Dibishviit, Bi'inyan Echad, Chamur, Bishabbat, V'yom Tov. In one way, it is more stringent than Shabbat and Yom Tov. Why? Dibishabbat, Ike Isser, Al Ha'oseh, Melacha, Batmo. On Shabbat, the prohibition on the person himself. Aval Yidei Nachri, who rocks Shvut. But for a, to have a non-Jew do it is only Dirabanan, called Amir Lenachri. Right, you're not allowed to tell a non-Jew to work your field. Uvishmitah, but by shmitim, osavodet aret, if a non-Jew works your field, you're going to charei sadeh ozareh okotzer, al yidei nachere, you have a non-Jew work your field, nihi dehalot aseh shavodet aret eino, so he acknowledges, right, the Minchas Chinuch divides between the aseh of shmitah, you know what, okay, we'll do this and maybe we'll do it again tomorrow. Minchas Chinuch says, listen, on Shemitah, if you read through the Pesukim, there were Aseis, and there were Lot Aseis, right? There were mitzvot, positive mitzvot, let the land rest, and there were prohibitions, don't work the land. So Minchas Chinuch comes up with the following. He says, Halot Aseis of Adar, Enoki, Hakol, Katuv, Lenocha, Chalot, Tizra. All the prohibitions are written, focused on the person. B'lashon Nocha. It's going on the person. Like, don't plant your field. Asay over v'chol avodet karka afilo yidei achirim d'chsiv shabbat shabbaton yel aretz v'shabta aretz. He says, listen, if you read the psukim carefully, and tomorrow what I want you to do is start by going back to the psukim to see what he's doing, okay, and try to understand the Rambam, and if you can, the other Achronim here, and then think of any other possible nafkaminas. Okay, that's all your job for tomorrow, and we'll wrap it up as much as we can tomorrow, right? He says, listen, all the mitzvot asay seem to focus on the land. Vishapta haaretz. Shabbat shabbaton. Yel aretz. The land will rest. So he says, the mitzvah asay, there's a positive commandment to bring about the result of the land to rest. And the prohibitions are on the person. And therefore, if you have a non-Jew work your field, do you violate the lot asays? No. Do you violate the asays? Yes. So now we have a second Svei Dinim. Not the Isser of Shemitah is both on the person and on the land, but rather the positive commandments are on the land, right? The positive commandments are result-oriented. Thou shalt ensure that the land rests. And the prohibitions are on the person, which are, you shall not work the field. So if you rent it out to a non-Jew, you avoid the prohibitions, but fail to live up to the positive commandments, the mitzvah asay. Over because it tells you the land should rest. You have other result-oriented prohibitions, like Beit Shammai, who thinks that on Shabbat you can't allow your vessels to work, even if you're not working. Or letting your animal rest on Shabbat. So if I rent it out to a Jew or non-Jew, and he said this is right. Okay? So Minchas Chinuch is the one who made it famous, where he thinks that there is a mitzvah of Shvita La'aretz. However, he distinguishes between the Aseh and the Lot Aseh. Okay, so because, as crazy as this is, tomorrow is the last day of his month before Chagim. Does not make me happy. But fine. So Lochon King used to rant about it and say that Misha Barai Ben Hazmane Matidli Tena Hadin, right? He who created vacation will one day, right, face judgment for it. I'm not thrilled about this, but fine. But that means I can't drag on this topic. So what I want you to do as much as you can tomorrow, and tomorrow is also the Lulav and Eshtog thing. 11. So we are going to have early shear. So we don't have that much theater time. So, but our goal tomorrow then is to polish this off, maybe look back to the Pesukim and see where it comes from, right? See a few other nafkaminas, right? And again, these ideas will probably come up more during the year, but I wanted to at least get this out. Because first of all, I think it's a very sort of easy, basic hakira to sort of, you know, get used to the way these things work, but also because you do see a bridge between the Tamei HaMitzvot and the actual law, which I thought was important. Right, Zemel's sphere is starting. I guess that is my